Welcome, committee members. Although we're sparse in number, I think we'll have some more on the way. And welcome to those of you in the audience.
Good.
Here comes some more. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2415 and also simultaneously a public hearing on House Bill 2744. Jim, would you like to read a staff summary?
Thank you, Chair. Chair and committee, House Bill 2415 abolishes the Certificate of Initial Mastery and the Certificate of Advanced Mastery, declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2003. House Bill 2744 directs school districts and public charter schools to implement content standards and statewide assessment in mathematics, science, and English. Directs school districts to implement Certificate of Initial Mastery in mathematics, science, and English. Makes implementation of other subjects optional. Declares emergency effective July 1, 2003. I also have three letters of testimony from individuals who were not going to be here. Deborah Summer, Superintendent of Cambry School District. Mara Jellis, 5th grade teacher, Cambry School District. And Dee Sweatman of Parrish Middle School. And you'll find the letters in your packets.
Thank you very much, Jim. With that, then we will call up. Is this Kane first?
No. Rob Kane and John.
Okay. Good. We'll call up Rob Kramer and Don Phillips.
Good afternoon and good evening, I guess. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Don Phillips. I'm Chief of Staff for Representative Randy Miller, who regrets not being here with you this evening due to other business in his district today. And we don't want to go into too much detail about House Bill 2415, but just kind of remind the folks in the audience and the committee about some of the kind of the overview goals of the legislation. And I think there's been some confusion and maybe a little miscommunication in the press and in the media about what the bill does and what it doesn't do. And so let me just touch on a couple of points. What the bill does do is give us a more reliable, less costly, less time-consuming system of assessing whether our kids are meeting our state standards. It's pretty cut and dry. What the bill does not do is repeal Oregon's School Reform Act of the 21st century. That remains in place after House Bill 2415, if and when it's adopted. It does not throw out Oregon's standards. Those remain on the books. And it does not get rid of testing. There will still be rigorous and aggressive testing. And you will hear more about some amendments that we've been working on. Obviously, our folks down in Legislative Council have been very, very busy the past couple of weeks. So we're just still working on some of those. We'll have those to you, hopefully, at the end of the hearing today. But basically, the amendments deal with the testing component, kind of outline what we're trying to accomplish, and I think Representative Miller touched on that at the earlier hearing. And he asked Rob Kramer from the Oregon Education Coalition to join us today to kind of help explain a little bit more about the intricacies of the amendments and if you have any more questions about what the bill does and so forth. So I'm going to turn it over to Rob.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rob Kramer, President of the Oregon Education Coalition, and I'll just very simply or quickly describe the amendments as they will be proposed to this bill. Of course, they can't be formally adopted into the bill until there's a work session. But what the amendments change from the original bill is that it requires the Department of Education to contract with an outside testing development organization to develop a system of assessments for Oregon standards, aligned to Oregon standards, that fully comply with the federal No Child Left Behind law, which are objective, which meet validity and reliability standards for test construction, which will be in place by the year 2005 and 2006, and in that year will replace the current system of assessments. And that's quite simply the scope of the amendments. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I think the lack of questions does not reflect our lack of interest. We've heard this subject before, and we've heard a great number. We've had a great number of emails and other information, so we thank you for presenting. Yes, Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
either one of you can answer this question. Since we already have standards and questions and assessments that are aligned and approved by No Child Left Behind, what would be the purpose in spending the money to contract and ask the department to get an outside agency to get something that would be the same?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, the new system of assessments actually would not be the same as the old system of assessments, and there would be some significant differences in the new assessments versus the old. Number one, we should recognize, I think, that it does not make good policymaking sense to have the tests that test whether Oregon's kids have met standards developed by the same agency that is accountable for implementing the reform. That is, that's a direct conflict of interest to have the same organization who's accountable for implementing the reform design the tests that essentially are the audit of the success of that reform. And so by having an outside organization develop those tests, we get around that conflict of interest. As far as the cost goes, it was another question of yours, Representative Hobson, it would actually be cheaper to have an entirely new system of tests developed for Oregon standards. Since we also have to have new tests anyway for No Child Left Behind, we need content tests in grades 4, 6, and 7, which we do not have at this point. No Child Left Behind requires tests in grades 3 through 8. Right now, we only have tests in grades 3, 5, and 8. But it would actually be cheaper to have an entirely new system of tests developed by an outside organization and administered to Oregon's kids than what the Oregon Department of Education spends on test development right now. So it would actually save money.
Follow-up, Mr.
Follow-up.
I'm assuming we can't go through a real cost analysis at this point, but I'd be real interested in seeing that. My question is more related to your original issue. Is it your feeling and assertion then that teachers are not the appropriate people to test their students on what they've taught them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, teachers do indeed have formative assessments all the time for where their students are. But we're not talking about formative assessments here. We're talking about high-stakes, large-scale summative assessments. And no, I don't believe teachers have the expertise to develop summative high-stakes tests. In fact, teachers haven't, in fact, developed Oregon's tests. They've submitted tests or test questions to a test bank, which are then pilot tested and field tested and put through psychometric ringers and things like that to develop them. So, no, teachers are not the appropriate entity to develop high-stakes, large-scale summative assessments.
Follow-up?
Thank you. I would offer that the accumulation of credits for a high school diploma is about as high-stake testing as you can get, and teachers are responsible for that. How do you account for that difference in looking at it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, there's a significant difference between the elements of a grade that go into a course grade and a high-stakes assessment, because a high-stakes assessment is essentially a one-shot deal. This child, the student takes the test, passes or fails. You might get another shot at the test, but it's essentially a one-time event. Whereas a course grade is the accumulation of lots of individual assessments on homework, on tests, on term papers, on quizzes that compile over the course of a semester or a term. And that is a significantly different animal than a high-stakes assessment. Teachers are fully qualified to make that determination based on accumulated evidence for a grade in a class.
One last
follow-up.
Thank you. Would you not consider the acquisition of a high school diploma the highest of all high-stakes tests?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, it's not a test. A acquisition of a diploma is not a test. It is an accumulation of evidence that says you have met the requirements of a diploma. And again, I believe there's a fundamental distinction between a high-stakes test and that accumulation of evidence, which we call coursework, grades, and then a diploma.
Mr. Chair, if I could just follow up on her original question, and Representative Hobson, you asked, what's the difference between the old test and the new test? I believe Representative Miller mentioned part of this on his testimony on Monday, that our current testing system is developed by Oregon's testing folks at the Oregon Department of Education and local educators to test Oregon's standards. Under the new testing system, we would look at nationally standardized testing terminology as well as localized Oregon, so we could compare our students to students in other parts of the country as well as how we're doing within the state. So I think maybe there's a difference in that perspective.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That actually leads to the question I was going to ask. Mr. Kramer, can you tell me what kind of group you would envision qualifying for this contract and maybe name some of the ones that you think might do it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, there are many organizations that would be qualified to do this and, in fact, are right now and have developed tests for other states' assessment systems that comply with No Child Left Behind. To give a couple of names, CTB McGraw-Hill is one, and their nationally norm standardized test is called the Terra Nova. Now, we wouldn't adopt the Terra Nova. What this company would do if they were the contractee would be to take their bank of questions that is used with the Terra Nova and then adjust it with other questions that target it to Oregon standards. Now, there's another test, the company that puts together the California Achievement Test and the Stanford Achievement Test, also the Iowa Test of Basic Skills, which is done by Riverside Publishing. There are lots of different publishing companies that do these tests. Then there are nonprofit or quasi-governmental organizations like the Northwest Regional Education Laboratory who do some of this type of work. So there are lots of entities that I would imagine, if this bill were to pass, would be competing for this contract.
Follow up. Would your association be competing for this contract or any association that you're participating in?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, no, my organization would not, nor any organization that I'm affiliated with in any way, associated with, stockholder in, paid consultants fee by nothing.
Thank you.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you aware that many, many school districts and schools already do what's called off-grade testing using just exactly the instruments that you're referring to?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, I am aware of that, but also I'm aware that many, many schools and school districts have stopped that type of testing as the Oregon statewide assessments have been implemented. And my own school district is one of them. So, yes, some have hung on in the off-testing years to their nationally norm standardized tests, some have, but not as many as you might think. Many have dropped it and used other tests, off-year tests, that are more like Oregon's assessments instead.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to speak to House Bill 2744 from this vantage point. House Bill 2744 is designed to continue Oregon's standards for K-12 schools, but at the same time reduce burdens on students and teachers. Currently, if the SIM, if all the statewide assessments and the SIM were implemented, fully 7 subjects would be tested before a student can earn a SIM. We propose that we can do better than that. We would maintain our standards, and yet we would reduce the subjects to be assessed to English, math, and science. And these conform to the No Child Left Behind Act, which as of 2005, will mandate that schools across the nation will be tested annually from grades 3 through 8, plus 1 year in high school, likely the sophomore year. So we also would take the other subjects that are not SIM subjects, social studies, the arts, physical education, and a second language, they would be made optional by school districts. Now, there's been some confusion, I think, about Section 4 of the bill, and we wanted to clarify that, so we're going to have amendments prepared that would clearly indicate that current high school graduation requirements would remain untouched, and current high school class requirements would remain untouched. House Bill 2744 does not have anything to do with those particular areas. So we bring this bill in part because I've heard and I've examined from a lot of people, and I've examined a lot of evidence that suggests that there may be some misinformation on the state assessments and the resulting SIM. By the way, we're talking, 2744 talks about the SIM only. It does not talk about CAM. CAM is yet to be fully implemented, and we're going to address that in a separate bill or a separate issue, make it a separate issue. So some of the objections that I've heard about the SIM is the costliness of it, how expensive it is. I've received one email that said it probably costs $650 million. I've heard critics say $500 million. I've heard critics say $300 million. Their thought is, or their hope is, if we did away with the statewide assessments, somehow there'd be a massive amount of money that could be moved into education, perhaps to the classroom, make class sizes smaller, hire more teachers, who knows. But apparently that is not the case. There was an initial cost, certainly, when the program was implemented a number of years ago. But currently, superintendents tell us that the assessments and the SIM are embedded into the curriculum to the degree that if they went away, there would still be little savings because teachers would still teach. They might just teach a little bit some different things. So I don't know that cost is quite the concern that critics have said in the past. There are those who say that the SIM doesn't mean anything. There's a recent study from the Oregon University System which would counter that argument. That study took some freshmen at Oregon State University, took them into a math class, and they found that a SIM was as good a predictor of college success as was an SAT. Those kids who had a SIM did considerably better in that OSU freshman math class than did those students who did not have a SIM. One of the beauties of the SIM, by the way, is it can be earned in the 10th grade. An SAT is typically taken in the junior or senior year. Therefore, if a student is not doing well in the SIM, he or she has plenty of time to improve his or her academic skills and set himself or herself up to be more likely to be successful at the university level. And again, I think it's very important to acknowledge that the No Child Left Behind Act is looming out there, it's lurking out there, it's very, very important because we cannot ignore it. And so we need to conform our assessments to the No Child Left Behind. Oregon was one of the very first, if not the first state, to be approved by the federal government in terms of the quality and effectiveness of our assessments and our standards. So I feel pretty good about that. So these are some of the thoughts that went into this bill. And with that, I think probably I need to stop talking. And we'll bring up Steve Novick, Bob Seward, and Vicki Fleming, please. Steve, would you like to bring up Wayne Feller? He's on the list. Music with chairs? Okay.
Sure.
No music, but that's okay.
That's fine. Thank you, Chairman Backlund, for having me here. I'm Vice Chairman Thompson. For the record, I'm Wayne Feller. I'm currently a state board member and past board chairman. And earlier on Monday, you heard our Jill Kirk, who is our present chairman. She's very able and articulate, and she presented you with information and written testimony. I would just like to make a few comments on some of the things that she said and we have been doing. And I'm really, on the certificate of initial mastery, I'm really not so committed to the certificate as I am for what they stand for. And the certificate of initial mastery has come to stand for academic substance and rigor and accurate measurements. And those are the things that are fundamental to what we have done in school improvement. And that's what the certificate of initial mastery has come to mean. The certificate of advanced mastery is connecting education with what is to follow, whether it's work or further education, and it's to make our education relevant and related and meaningful, and we are simply trying to find different mechanisms to make those things happen. And as a state board, we've worked really hard to implement the statutes that the legislature has passed to implement school improvement. As we look to alter the course with these two bills, I would like to, for us not to forget the progress that has been made, and I think that can be exemplified by going into any third or fifth or eighth or tenth grade class and see how much progress and how much more rigor and how much more academic achievement we are finding in our schools now than we had just a mere few years ago when these things were adopted. And although schools may not have capacity in the same areas that are outside of what the bill calls for, the three core areas, as far as the arts, physical education, and social studies and second language goes, as Chairman Backlund and Representative Haas and know from their years in school, we're not without standards in these areas. The standards are set in the classroom by the classroom teachers. You know what it takes to get credits, and the classroom teacher, if you're a history or a PE teacher, you have a standard that has to be met to pass the course to get the diploma. I think those are really all the remarks. I did want to make one comment on the knowledge and skills test that you've heard already. I really don't think, if you look at a fifth grade math test, if it's a CTBS or a Stanford 9 or the Iowa test or our Oregon assessment test, there are not very many of us that can look at the 25 or 40 questions and tell the difference. I mean, they are just not that different. I believe I know a couple years ago I took the 10th grade science assessment that we give for the state of Oregon just to see what the test was like. And the tests are good. They measure what they're supposed to, and you can sort through lots of tests, but I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of difference as far as assessments, whether you go to an outside firm, use the ones we have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Steve Novick, Legislative Coordinator for the Department of Education, and today I'm standing in for Pat Burke, Deputy Superintendent, who is on a mission with Superintendent Castillo to Washington, D.C. to talk with the federal government about No Child Left Behind. I'd like to follow up on Chair Backlund's comments about the requirements of the federal law, because, as The Clash once said, if you fight the law wins, so it's important to know the law. The federal law requires an extensive development and approval process for any state system of standards and assessments. Specifically, the federal law says that any state desiring to receive a grant under Title I, quote, shall submit to the Secretary a plan developed in consultation with local educational agencies, teachers, principals, administrators, and parents. The federal law also states that each state is to develop its own system of standards and assessments. There is not a national system out there that people can just randomly adopt. It's also important to note that the state that does not have a federally approved statewide system of standards and assessments risks losing federal Title I dollars. And there's specific language in the law, which you have in front of you, that refers to the penalties for not having a system in place. And it's also very important to note, as the chair has already noted, that the federal government has, in fact, approved our system of standards and assessments. We are one of 19 states that has received federal approval. And the one message that we hope folks take from this is that even if we thought it was a good idea to dispose of a system of standards and assessments we have where Oregon teachers actually write test questions, and to adopt a system created by a big, greedy, impersonal, national testing company. Even if we thought that was a good idea, that's not something we could do overnight. We'd have to have that, as Mr. Kramer has indicated, we have to have their tests geared towards our standards, and we have to go through an extensive consultation process. And I also just wanted to note that we appreciate that Mr. Kramer made a favorable reference to the Northwest Regional Education Lab and remind the committee that Michael Koslow of the lab came here a couple of days ago in support of House Bill 2744 and specifically stated that it's good to have an assessment system where teachers are directly involved in the assessment process. Thank you.
Me? Is it me next?
Oh. And I'll give you Bob Seward.
I think the answer is yes, Bob.
Yeah, I guess so.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Seward. I'm the Associate Superintendent for the Office of Curriculum Instruction Field Services and for the Office of Special Education. And I too, am a stand-in for Bill Oddie, who is the is also on that same trip to Washington, D.C., concerning federal requirements on our assessment system. On the side of the assessment tests themselves, I probably lack some knowledge that Bill would have. I do, however, have the knowledge on the standard setting for both content standards and performance standards. That work is done by my office, so I can speak to that issue. What I do want to say is that federal law does require it, and No Child Left Behind, that we do create content standards in the state, and that we need to assess students on those content standards, and there's three content areas that the federal law does require. We have done that work, and we do have content standards in the three required areas, and in two additional areas we're working very diligently to get those content standards in place and are working up to two additional content areas to begin in the next year or two. What we have done is worked very closely with Achieve Inc. Incorporated. It was a national nonprofit, bipartisan organization that looks at state standards, evaluates those against their own criteria and against other state standards, and have found Oregon standards to be quite good. In fact, we meet all of their criteria for having exemplary standards in the state of Oregon. We've also had an independent study look at our state assessment system on the other side, not just the standard, but now looking at the assessments, and found that we meet all the standards of the psychometric requirements of many organizations in the country that do psychological evaluation and large-scale assessments. So we have a good set of standards, both content standards, performance standards, and a good set of assessments that do measure what they purport to measure and do a good job of reporting that out to the people that need that information, both parents and teachers and administrators in schools. No other existing test that we could purchase off the shelf would meet that same rigor as well as the Oregon assessments do. And I want to make that point that we could purchase tests that could meet some parts of the rigor, but in fact Oregon meets every rigor of all of those evaluations that we've had done in all areas. And I'd just like to refer you to the last two pages of the handouts that you have around assessments. If you look at those, you'll see that Oregon has many rigors of evaluation about the tests. Veracity that compared to ITBS, for instance, we actually exceed those standards greatly over national assessments. We do contract out, by the way, for some things for the statewide assessments. We do, for instance, pay for shipping, scanning, scoring, mailing, a variety of tasks that we need, the State Department needs to do in order to issue the tests, have them returned to us, have them scored, have them evaluated, and have them reported back to the folks that need that information. We don't, however, contract out for standard setting. We have tackled that task ourselves. We believe that Oregon teachers are as knowledgeable and as skilled as any teacher set of teachers in the country, that they can advise us and lead us into setting good standards for children in Oregon and Oregon schools. And we believe that that's the important quality we have in our standards, that they are Oregon's children, they're Oregon's teachers that are setting standards for those children and their performance in schools. And it's a very important concept for making sure that the tests are Oregon related. And with that, I think that I would end my comments and would be welcome questions after we're finished.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Vicki Fleming. I'm new to the role at the Oregon Department of Education as the Assistant Superintendent of Instructional Services, and I'm here representing the Superintendent's office this evening. As Steve said, she's in Washington I just want to briefly reemphasize what my colleagues have already said, that we have a system of standards and assessments that's helped to improve teaching and learning and student achievement that has withstood scrutiny of independent evaluators and has been approved by the federal government, and we're committed to maintaining this system. At the same time, we welcome these bills and this discussion because we realize it's time for a reevaluation. As Mr. Feller said earlier, all of us seem to be in agreement that we should focus our efforts on the three subjects, and they are in fact mandated by No Child Left Behind. The board, Senator Miller, Chair Backlund, and Superintendent Castillo all agree on that particular point. I realize that everyone is concerned about our school funding crisis, none more than Superintendent Castillo is, and we would like to do something to ease the burden on schools. Eliminating our assessment system is not the answer. It would not save money. In fact, it would cost money to do the work that we've already done once again. And in the end, the only way to solve our school funding crisis is to fund schools, and we look forward to working with you toward that solution in the future weeks. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, well, very good. Thank you. We have established a minimum number of rules, and Jim will run us through those. He has a very colorful card up here that has some meaning. So, Jim, if you want to run us through that.
One of the intents that we have is that we have a number of people who signed up. We want to make sure that we can hear from as many people as we possibly can. And the way that we accomplish this is to limit testimony to 3 minutes. I have a stopwatch up here, and when the witness gets to the one-minute mark, I hold up the red card, and we ask you to just conclude your comments within that 1 minute. For those of you who might be reading from a written statement, we ask that you summarize rather than try and read the entire thing, because more often than not, you end up going over the 3 minutes. And those are our basic rules, and we should get through quite a few folks tonight.
Thank you very much. We'll call up to the table Chris Kane, Harvey Matthews, and Kay Baker. Who would like to lead off here?
I would.
Okay, very good, Chris.
Good evening. I'm Chris Kane, president of the Oregon Education Association. The OEA represents 45,000 community college faculty, teachers, and education support professionals in the state of Oregon. Today I'm here to support House Bill 2744, modifying SIM requirements as a reasonable response to Oregon's budget crisis. In 2000, some 700 OEA members debated an organizational position on SIM at our annual representative assembly, coming up with a position that met the needs of all of our members from elementary grades, middle school, and high school members with specialties in English, math, science, second languages, physical education, fine arts, health, civics, economics, and social studies was not easy, and we did not make everyone happy. The opinions of our membership are diverse on what has proven to be a controversial issue. While OEA members are divided on where they stand on state content standards and assessments, we are united in our support for a well-rounded education for all of Oregon students. We know that students need to know more than just the basics of English, math, and science to be successful. We approved a resolution that year, and I've provided the content of that in the written testimony, but in the spirit of the time limit, I'll just sum it up to say that essentially we support SIM and CAM to the extent that they are fully funded. OEA supports House Bill 2744 because it begins to address some of the time and resource problems that educators across the state are facing without disregarding an assessment system that has taken many years to create and that was created by educators. The bill keeps the state system needed to meet the requirements of No Child Left Behind. In this time of limited and in some cases non-existent resources, it would be unwise to throw out an assessment system that aligns to state standards, that teachers and students understand, and that helps Oregon meet the new federal requirements. To begin all over in this process would be an extreme waste of time, training, and money. The implementation of SIM has been an interesting evolution for our membership. Some school districts have chosen only to implement the basics, but many school districts have expanded on the requirements of the state. While our members view elements of SIM as an administrative burden, some of these issues are as a result of local school district decisions, and that is where they should be resolved. Many of our members acknowledge that SIM has led to a new understanding of what constitutes best practices. Because students will continue to read books, write papers, give speeches, complete math problems, and participate in other activities necessary for learning, removing requirements already implemented will not have much impact on the way our teachers choose to teach. In recent days, OEA members have expressed concern that support of House Bill 2744 should not be interpreted as anything less than complete support for a comprehensive education program for our students. And that includes English, math, science, second languages, physical education, fine arts, health, civics, economics, and social studies. I want to make sure that our support for this in no way sends a message that streamlining the assessments means we support devaluing these programs for the students they serve. Many thrive, stay in school, gain self-esteem, and are prepared for competing in a global economy because of these programs. But given that we are in tough economic times, House Bill 2744 is an appropriate response to a need to relieve mandates for school districts. We think that the State Board of Education's indication that they would favor bringing all seven subject areas under statewide standards for comparability and accountability is an idea worthy of inclusion in this bill. OEA also notes that the sponsors of the bill continue
Chris,
to affirm...
Could you finish up in a sentence or so?
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. that House Bill 2744 does not make any changes to graduation requirements, curriculum, or state education benchmarks. OEA supports the right of all students to receive a comprehensive education. Sorry, I didn't see the red sign.
Oh.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I thank you for this opportunity to testify before you in support of House Bill 2744. My name is Kay Baker, and I'm the superintendent of Salem-Keizer. Salem-Keizer Public Schools serves over 37,000 students and represents the second largest district in your state. Since the implementation of the educational reform in this last decade, we have worked hard to not only evaluate and revise our delivery system to meet the letter of the law, but also the spirit of the law. And in doing that, we also have awarded a lot of SIM certificates to students because of the work of our educators and the folks that are in our school districts. You will find, and I hear from people, that as a result of the SIM and the assessments and the standards, the professional development is focused in our district, that educators are talking together about student learning, that data is being used and talked about. It's used as a thermometer for kids. It's used as a thermometer for staff and buildings and districts and everybody to see where they are and what they can do better. Our record of standard achievement, or as we call it, the RSA, gives students and parents a clear picture of where their students are and how close they are to meeting standards for graduation and for working the workforce. And when our employers in the district ask to see the record of standard achievement, they also can see where our students are and where their strengths are. The changes we believe that House Bill 2744 and the changes make a significant improvement to the SIM program and will allow our schools to focus more carefully on the core subject areas of math, science, and English. However, at the same time, still having the ability as a district to have a comprehensive high school, as Chris talks about. The changes in the requirements in the required content areas also allow for a much clearer and closer alignment to the requirements of the No Child Left Behind Act, and they reduce the possibility of duplicating efforts or increasing the efforts that are happening in what is a group of with all of our teachers out there doing so many things. The workload issues and the changes in this will certainly affect that. Delaying the SIM requirements that fall outside of the core areas would improve the efficiencies to our current educational program, we believe. And on behalf of the Salem-Keizer School, I come to you in support of this bill. And I thank you for your consideration.
Good evening. Chair Backlund, members of the committee, I'm Harvey Matthews. This is Sophie Matthews. And so I assume...
You're going to testify too? No.
Well, I don't want to leave her behind, so oh, okay. She gets 6 minutes. I've come here representing Associated Oregon Industries. So Associated Oregon Industries began in 1895 as an organization to promote Oregon products. And it's the largest business association
representing over 20,000 companies. Our member businesses employ over 325,000 of Oregon's private employees, and our members are highly dependent on the quality of education provided by Oregon's public schools. We have a long history of involvement with education. In 1987, we wrote the school safety net legislation that temporarily solved the state's education funding crisis. In 1987 as well, we began lobbying for Head Start. In 1989, we published this Partners for Success video. In 1991, we had a symposium on international education standards for Oregon, which included six nations. Also in 91, we supported the Education Act for the 21st Century, which started SimCam, of course. And we published Saving America's Children, which aired on public broadcasting TV. In 1999, we supported the charter school legislation, and in 2002, what I've handed out to you is this last September, did an article on this very issue of testing and assessment that both 2415 and 2744 discuss. My history is pretty quick. I grew up here in Salem. I went to public schools. I went to both private and public universities. I taught history and English at public schools for 5 years before getting into this marvelous process. I led the reform efforts required by the 21st Century Act in my high school and started an alternative education school in that district. And AOI likes about this legislation, about the 21st Century Act, is that it had a measurable and lofty goal, and it caused teachers across grade levels to emphasize the importance of working together and making sure students had a whole long history of having their curriculum aligned. And we want to continue that. Nothing in 2744 would do away with that, but we do have some criticism on 2415. It, by eliminating SIM and CAM as goals and standards that drives the curriculum, it doesn't replace them with anything else, and that's a concern. The elimination of the second language requirement is also a concern to my members, and the elimination of the connection between K-12 and community colleges is also something that we're very concerned about. So we do believe there needs to be a vision for a new assessment system or a continuation of the assessment system in a different way, which that article delineates. I thank you very much for the opportunity to present here.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question for Chris Kane. My question was, how do your members feel about, in House Bill 2744, making the foreign language component optional?
Well, we have some concerns about the language in Section 4 that says may, districts may do it. So that is a big concern to us, and we would like to have that clarified, not only for foreign languages, but also for a lot of the other subjects that are mentioned, because we believe they're all necessary for a well-rounded, comprehensive education.
Thank you.
I might jump in here, too. This morning for... not that I'm very exact, but it was for 42 minutes and 30 seconds. We had a conference with Legislative Council, and we dealt with Section 4. We spent a great deal of time on the word may and what that means. We looked at the Oregon rules in terms of what our graduation requirements. We went through all that, and we are preparing an amendment that we believe will address this concern, because we've had a number of emails and other communications that indicate a real concern, and so we need to clarify that, and we hope to do that.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. Would Darrell Trussell, Diane McKillop, and Marie Kramer come up, please?
Hey, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Marie Kramer. I'm a teacher at McNary High School here in Salem-Keizer. I've been a SIM coordinator for 2.5 years. I've been on the math content panel for the state, a scoring director for the performance assessment, scored several times, and I'm currently a member on the PASS moderation panel for the Oregon University System. And I've heard a lot of discussion about a lot of the things that I wanted to share, but one of the main things is about the development of SIM and the great ownership that teachers, including myself, have had in the process, getting to choose items for the test, decide what is eligible content for the test, help write items for the performance assessment, and then get to score the work and see the improvement over the last 10 years that the students have made as we've scored that statewide. And the process is the same in math and English for the amount of ownership that teachers have. They've been very widely involved in the entire process. I'm very much in support of maintaining what we have currently, especially in math, both the multiple choice test that's been developed and refined over the years, and the performance assessment, where the students are not only answering kind of mechanical math questions like they would on the multiple choice test across the strands, but they're allowed to choose a problem and then solve it in extensive detail, where they can show us how well they understand it, choose a process that will work, follow it through, communicate clearly, and most importantly, verify that what they've done is correct, which we know the business community really supports that. If you're going to do some math that has anything to do with money or anything like that in our society, you want to make sure your numbers are right. So you need to double-check everything. I believe that both assessments in math really give us a good picture of what a student can do, that one without the other is really lacking. As far as my association with PASS, this is a performance-based admissions program through the Oregon University System, and they have honored SIM, or acknowledged SIM, as also a method for students to show to the colleges that they are good problem solvers, and that's part of that admission system as well. So even the universities are on board now with SIM and showing that in the areas that they want for college admission, that's one of the key things they're looking for. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Daryl Trussell, and I'm a high school teacher. I've been teaching for 19 years, and I'm also a mathematics department chair. I'd like to address what I've seen in the years since the SIM has been implemented at the high school level. Our students are coming to high school better prepared in mathematics. They have consistently raised their scores each year. The SIM has caused us to communicate not just among ourselves within the high school, but it's also gotten communication started between the feeder schools. I meet with a group from area middle schools. I meet with a group from area elementary schools, and we meet to discuss the standards, where things are at what level, so that we have this vertical articulation now that we never used to discuss. The SIM has given us clear guidelines to follow. In mathematics, the state of Oregon has looked at and aligned somewhat to the NCTM standards, the National Council for Teachers of Mathematics. So we know that we are on board nationally with our math standards. And as was mentioned before, it's also come out now that this is a good predictor of student success at colleges. The one piece of the assessment that I would like to address specifically is the what we call in mathematics the problem-solving assessment or the performance assessment. This is a piece that if you buy an off-the-shelf standardized test is not going to be there. The problem-solving assessment is the piece that gets our students to think mathematically. It's a skill that they can take with them throughout their life. I feel strongly that mathematics should not consist of isolated sets of numbers that you simply perform operations on. That's the way most of us learned and then quickly forgot math. The solutions of what are sometimes called referred to as naked number math problems hold very little value for our students. Does that take a little bit more time? Yes, they do. But that is, I think, a great trade-off for our students because they're going to go out into the workforce. That's the kind of a student that the workers would like to hire, one who can solve problems. I also think at this point that to look and eliminate any type of, or to eliminate the SIM would really set back any type of reform. I just want to conclude in that when I first started teaching, I would go to workshops, and there'd be new types of educational reforms that would come on board, and they would eventually go away after one or two years. In fact, one of my colleagues said to me, just wait enough years, and they all go away. And so I think this sets a very bad precedent if we turn around and eliminate something we've worked so hard at for 10 years.
Hey, Chairman Backlund and members of the Education Committee, I join my two colleagues from McNary High School in support of House Bill 2744 and our concern about the elimination of SIM. My name is Diane McKillop. I've been an English teacher at McNary for 18 years and a department coordinator for 5 years and was a SIM coordinator for 3. Just wanted to address the SIM in English and what that means. I know you've heard a lot about it, but I'm going to repeat it. Our SIM in English involves a multiple choice test in reading and literature, a performance assessment in writing, classroom work samples in writing, and classroom speaking opportunities. All of these SIM areas are aligned to national and state standards for language arts, and this comes out from the State Department of Education, and this is what we follow and what we align to. And this is a result of the school reform. Alignment to standards means that teachers in the classroom throughout the state are focusing their instruction to match these standards. What is taught at third grade is a building block for fourth grade, and this continues through high school. Middle and high school courses are designed or rewritten to assure that students learn what the standards describe. This might be students will be able to write in a variety of modes appropriate for audience and purpose. An organized educational system outlines content standards and assesses student learning of those standards. Oregon has spent years developing this system and is constantly modifying assessments, and teachers constantly modify instruction based on student results on our assessments. Our teaching and learning process is working. Last year, 90% of McNary sophomores passed the state writing test, and that's not where we started. We did not start at 90%. SIM and alignment. This alignment process is a result of SIM and school reform. Before, teachers were teaching a variety of skills, but not in an organized format. What we are currently doing has improved instruction and student learning. Students now come to high school with the skills needed to learn advanced content. When I talk about a thesis statement and topic sentences in my sophomore English classes, students know these terms because their teachers have been building on these concepts since third grade. Some teachers in school districts were reluctant to join this educational reform because they knew, like others, it would go away. Please don't make them right. Are all students excited about this? No. They would rather act something out than write an essay and do a speech. Are all teachers excited about this? No. Grading essays is very time-consuming. However, reading, speaking, and writing are all part of the English classroom, and we now are requiring it and then assessing to see what students are doing. In 2005, a writing work sample will be part of the SAT. Public education is alive in Oregon, in spite of what some said today. However, public education needs consistency and support. To stop a successful reform now to save money will have serious consequences in the future. Support the SIM process, modify it, but support it, please. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Of Rod Carl, Hans Vandermeer, and Marcia Kelly, please.
Good evening. My name is Hans Vandermeer. I'm from Corvallis, Oregon. I'm a professor at Oregon State University in the Department of Exercise and Sports Science. I would like to use my time to just share with you some of my concerns about the potential passing of both of the House bills. Thanks for the opportunity to address this committee. Let me start out that I acknowledge the very precarious position that you find yourself in today. I hope that the decisions made by this committee and the legislature later on will offer good guidance for the rest of the state of Oregon. In 1998, Oregon's legislature passed House Bill 3307. This House bill enabled Oregon's physical education professionals to be actively involved in an educational reform effort to which they were left out previously. School districts, at this point, given that bill, must demonstrate that the students are meeting state content standards upon graduation. The passage of this House bill was a result of a concerted effort of countless professionals, dedicated citizens, to see to it that all students, not just the high-skilled and gifted athletes, would have access to learning the tools, the strategies, and supporting knowledge underlying the physically active lifestyle. While state-level assessment would have clearly been preferred, we were overjoyed that we were allowed in the game. This important step forward for our oft-beleaguered and often ridiculed field could not have come at a more appropriate time. School physical education programs are, or should be, in the business of equipping K-12 students with the skills and knowledge relative to making physical activity truly a part of daily living for all of them, and making informed decisions about physical activity as it pertains to overall health. I'm not talking about finding the next star quarterback or point guard for one's district's athletic teams. I'm talking about having high school graduates be informed about what physical activity can do for their overall health, what activity strategies are more appropriate for specific fitness and activity goals, being able to choose from a variety of lifetime activities, and be sufficiently skilled, knowledgeable, and confident about those to engage in them. I'm talking about being able to spot bogus products sold by the billion-dollar fitness quackery industry. I'm talking about my 13-year-old daughter and her girlfriends who need to gain sufficient understanding about the importance of getting involved in strength conditioning at a reasonable level. Engaging in that behavior and knowing how to do this well will pay enormous and perhaps life-saving dividends later on, because they will have a lower risk of breaking hips as a consequence of minimizing the loss of bone mineral density. If the state does not have real outcome expectations for a subject like physical education, for districts in physical education, if districts do not have real expectations of schools, and if schools have no real expectations for a physical education program, this content, this material, will not be learned. And the irony could not be more obvious today. On one hand, physical education's presence in the school curriculum has never been more legitimate, at least from a public health perspective. The protective effects of regular, moderate physical activity are unequivocal. Put simply, leading a sedentary life is much like playing Russian roulette. One's risk of contracting any number of chronic diseases goes up exponentially. Consequently, over time, it helps drive up the annual health care costs of this country of enormous wealth to even more obscene levels.
Can you finish in a sentence or two or three?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll get back to the rest later. what I'd like to do is have you realize what, ask you what you want from schools as far as physical education is concerned. The recently enacted No Child Left Behind Act is an attempt by our current administration to claim global superiority in the world of education, all with the tacit assumption that the needed funding will follow. The current system in place in Oregon is sufficiently well developed to ensure a high-quality education for Oregon's children, including physical education and its youth, if it's properly funded. Last week, one of your colleagues was interviewed following the announcements of the latest economic forecast and likened the efforts to deal with the increasing budget shortfall as to rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic prior to its fate. While the choice of this analogy is understandable and logical, I don't think Oregon is like the Titanic. Titanic's captain probably failed to differentiate between a problem and a disaster. When he finally did come to grips, it was too late. He had no choices.
Could we get you down to one sentence?
Sure. I urge you to do two things. One, keep the bar for students that was set in 1990 with the House Bill 3565. Keep it where it is. Oregon's future depends on it, and make the people of Oregon realize that your words about bipartisanship last January was more than lip service. Stable and sufficient funding for high-quality schools is possible. We really do pay now or we pay later. Thanks very much for allowing me to speak.
Chair Backlund and members of the committee, I'm Marcia Kelly, and I'm presenting the testimony for the co-chairs of our State Public Policy Committee, Betty House and Alice Bartelt, and Chair Backlund will realize that Ms. House is a former educator of long time in the school system. They've surveyed members who are teachers and other professionals in the field, and they want to let you know that the overwhelming majority were very adamant about keeping the SIM and putting the CAM sort of on hold at this point. It was developed over many years by side councils. The councils were made up of students, parents, teachers, and other staff members at the buildings, and the sim was developed to go along with the benchmarks that tell where children's development is. And to comply with the No Child Left Behind, it would be necessary to add to the existing sim, but not completely redo with additional tests. This would accomplish the goals of evaluating student progress and allowing parents the information of how their child is progressing and setting the standards the community understands. And I think that that's one of the things in discussing this with Betty when we were initially talking about the legislation. And she said that some of the teachers who were not involved in the initial development of the sim and the cam may not have quite as much ownership in it. We have this basis to build on, and it would be cost-effective as well as good for morale when staff feel ownership in it because they continue to discuss or develop the new grade levels that would have to be tested. The members of AUW who we were able to survey felt again that the sim should be retained and just say no to the cam at this time, and we only really addressed 2415. I think that 2474 fits more with, you know, just doing the sim and not the cam, but I don't have actual authority for the public policy chairs to say that we would like that. We'd have to look at it very carefully, especially with the amendments.
Okay, thank you very much. Oh, excuse me, Representative Dalto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Professor Vandermars.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out if you feel that eliminating the SIM mandate on physical education would devalue the role of physical education instruction in schools and why you might feel that.
Representative Dalto, as you probably are aware, it is an assessment scheme at this point at the Tier 2 level, and so individual districts are responsible for demonstrating that their students in the districts are coming out with the types of skills and knowledge. As far as we can tell, I'm in schools virtually every week. The districts at this point are working hard toward getting the standards put in place and the associated assessment strategies. If this bill were to pass, and if the word may or shall will come into the 2744, all it says is that instruction will take place. In effect, there is no expectations to demonstrate outcomes. If the funding picture does not improve in the state of Oregon in the near future, districts will most likely will start looking at eliminating, if they haven't done so already, art, music, physical education. And essentially, those subject matters will not be taught.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. So we have Pat Bedore, Bob Wellner, and Sandra Smith-Gangle, please. I guess we've done this page.
Good afternoon, Chair Backlund, Representative Hobson, members of the Education Committee. My name is Sandra Smith-Gangle. I am here representing the League of Women Voters, Marion Polk County chapter, and I am authorized by the State Action Committee to present this testimony with regard to House Bill 2744. And my particular comments will relate to the portions of that bill which make social sciences optional with regard to the implementation of the statewide standards, content standards, and assessments. Our chapter has done a study, which I will share with you in just a moment, and we would like you to consider that study as you deliberate on how you will enact House Bill 2744, which we do support. But there are a couple of quotes that I would like to relate first. The one comes from the League of Women Voters Action Committee manual, and it's as follows, quote, "League of Women Voters believes democratic government depends on the informed and active participation of its citizens," unquote. And then the second quote comes from the content standards booklet of the Department of Education, which defines the study of social sciences as follows. The study of social sciences prepares students for the responsibility of citizenship. It enables students to evaluate historical and contemporary issues, understand global relationships, and make connections between past, present, and future. Civics enables students to understand and apply knowledge about government and political systems and the rights and responsibilities of citizens, unquote. At its annual meeting in May of 2002, the Marion and Polk County's chapter of the League of Women Voters authorized a study of the social sciences curriculum at the high school level to be conducted throughout the 2002-03 year. The purpose of the study was to determine whether Oregon students are being adequately prepared to exercise their role as citizens and voters in the American democracy, and will be adequately prepared to understand and deal with international issues in the 21st century global community. The committee reviewed documents from the State Department of Education and the Salem-Keizer School District, conducted surveys and interviews with teachers and educational specialists, and reviewed textbooks that are used in social sciences classrooms. The League has been impressed with the overall thoroughness of the statewide content standards for social sciences, drafted by a team of Oregon social sciences teachers in conjunction with specialists from the Department of Ed. The content standards cover a wide variety of historical and cultural issues and provide students with a broad understanding of their nation and the world. The benchmarks for testing and the criteria for evaluating social science analysis questions have been carefully and thoughtfully developed. Overall, the program can be effective at empowering students to exercise their role as voters and responsible American citizens.
Could you finish up?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The League urges the implementation of the social sciences content standards under and also the assessment areas under the House Bill 2744, and that social sciences should not be optional, even if the minimum would be still retained for the high school diploma, as I believe the chair mentioned at the beginning of this session. We believe that social sciences are equal in importance and in value to English, mathematics, and science, and should be required of all students and assessed through carefully developed assessment tools, and adequate funding should be made available for the program.
Thank you. I need to make a comment at this point.
Yes, I know you're a teacher of social sciences.
Having been for 37 years a teacher of American history and American government, it was very difficult for us to propose a bill that did not require social sciences. We did that, though, to conform to No Child Left Behind, and we were concerned about the lack of funding for schools and the amount of time and effort and money that may be necessary to implement four subjects, history, civics, geography, and economics. So we would hope that school districts, if this bill were to pass, would choose to make social sciences a part of their STEM subjects. But that's the reason, basically, or those are the reasons why we went with the three subjects and not social sciences. So it was tough.
May I respond, Mr.
Please.
Chair? We understand your concerns, and we understand the financial issue that you're dealing with, and that is a very real issue, and certainly you need to address it. However, we would urge you to not let social sciences be the area that is allowed to become withered, and I believe that that's what may happen if textbooks are not updated, if materials are not upgraded, and if adequate materials are not made available to the students so that they will be prepared to exercise their role as responsible citizens when they graduate. We believe that the finances should be found somewhere to keep social sciences as one of the mandatory areas under the SIM.
I have another question. There are four subject matter areas within social sciences. If you could pick one, what would it be?
one to retain or one to remove?
If we had one to be, if we had one to be made a part of the STEM subjects. History, civics, geography, economics.
I cannot divorce history and civics simply because I believe that we are an American democracy, but we are not isolated from the rest of the world, and that we do need to see ourselves in conjunction with the history of the world and other cultures. And therefore, I cannot imagine separating history and civics and choosing only one.
Okay, it's a tough question. You answered it very well. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, yes, Representative Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would wait till everybody's finished, but since we're still on this subject, I have a question. Why do you think that STEM is a necessary prerequisite for responsible citizenship, as you put it?
It's not the STEM itself that I was looking at, but the standards that have been developed and that are a part of this document, the Oregon Standards. They're very, very carefully thought through. They are very thorough. And the assessment tools, which have been developed, are in the process of being developed by the department in order to determine the accuracy of the level of learning and meeting those benchmarks that have been set in the standards, are very very adequate at preparing students for a responsible adult role in this complicated world that we live in. So I don't see it as necessarily the word SIM being the magic word that I want to retain, but the content study, the content areas, and the assessment tools that have been developed pursuant to that program have been extremely well done and should not be abandoned.
Mr. Chair, if I might ask you a question or the committee as a whole, in my understanding of 2744, you would the bill would remove the social science SIM requirement, but it wouldn't reduce any of the standards in the social science fields. Is that right? And the standards would still be there. The students would just not have to move forward with the steps necessary for the SIM, right?
Representative Hobson, I'll think about that, Representative Dalton.
Thanks. He thinks while he has me talk. I think you're right in one way. I think what we're referring to are the specific standards that would be used for measurement of the learning and the knowledge that the kids receive. The graduation requirement is still there as far as it being a course offering. It would not be eliminated from a high school curriculum. But the very course content standards that have been developed would not be mandatory in the core SIM. A school district, and that's one of the words we're working on, may and shall, a school district, and I would assume a number of them still will, maintain the standards involved in the SIM requirements as they're in the standards, but it wouldn't be mandatory.
Is that satisfactory?
It's satisfactory to me. Yep. I mean, if we still have the standards, I don't understand why we need a certificate that's, to be a good citizen or a responsible citizen, or why a certificate would mean that a young person might vote at any greater rate than somebody else.
I would say, Representative Dalton, that we don't actually need a certificate of initial mastery. What we're talking about is we have a set of standards. We've developed assessments to measure students against those standards. And then when a student meets or exceeds those standards, he or she then wins or earns a SIM. We really wouldn't need a SIM, but we, I think, do need the standards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Pat Bedor. I'm superintendent of the Greater Albany Public School District, and I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak to you tonight.
Hey, excuse me, Pat. I must apologize for mispronouncing your name. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Everyone does.
Oh.
One of my tasks this morning was to meet with the principals who lead the buildings in my school district, 14 elementary schools, 3 middle schools, 2 high schools, and an alternative school. And it was my job to describe to them the devastation that will happen to their programs next year in terms of cuts in staff and their ability to provide the programs. And as I looked out across the room, these dedicated leaders are still recovering from dismantling of programs this year in response to the economic freefall that our state is in. And they look gaunt and desperate. They want to do it all. They want to do a good job, and we can't keep doing it all. So let me fast forward now, or fast backward, to an evening when a local senator from our district spoke to me and said, what can the legislature do for school districts if we can't come up with more money? Is there anything we can do to help you be more efficient? And I said, yes, untie our hands. He said, how do I do that? I said, Division 22. He said, what's that? So that started me on a process of putting together a list that you may have seen, and it's one of my handouts tonight. It's called Division 22 Considerations for Amendment or Waiver, and it lists some of the rules and procedures that if those were relaxed so that we had the flexibility to focus our limited resources and our staff time, that would be very helpful. Tonight I brought with me a blue sheet that focuses this list even more, and there are suggestions for the school performance reporting requirements that I know you're not dealing with tonight, and for the Certificate of Advanced Mastery requirements, which I know you're not dealing with tonight. But at number two, the Certificate of Initial Mastery requirements, we're proposing that we change that to just a Certificate of Mastery, that the areas are limited to the subject matter that you've already identified, and that we'd like an alignment with the federal regulations for No Child Left Behind. And change the time requirement for determining appropriate placement. Right now the language says after 1 year. We think it makes more sense to do that after the appropriate benchmark, at whatever time that happens, and eliminate requirements that districts offer alternative certificates. We're just asking for a streamlined way to focus our work, because the resources aren't there to continue doing what we've always done. And so I appreciate your the work that you've done and the expertise that's gone into it. I know that many of you are educators. And then the last document I brought tonight, I don't know if you've seen before, but this is a list developed by Jamie Vollmer, listing all of the curriculum requirements that have been added in this century. And it's a long list, and the printing is really small.
Pat, could you finish up, please?
You bet. We'd just like to be able to focus. The direction you're going with House Bill 2744 would allow us to do that, and I'd appreciate your consideration moving that forward.
I might add that you talked about, in effect, mandates, of a number of mandates, and I could show the audience a six-page, single-spaced list of mandates that the state imposes upon school districts. There is an ongoing work group involving Ways and Means Subcommittee in Education, involving the Policy Committee as well, and the people from COSA and OSBA, and we're looking at mandates to try to evaluate if it's a high cost, is it a high impact, is it a very positive thing. If it's a high cost and a low positive thing, that would be a great candidate to get rid of. So that subject is under review. I shouldn't say review. It's under study, and is ongoing and will continue to be ongoing. We're going to meet every Monday afternoon. We're going to look at those as we move forward. So it is a subject that we're working on. I don't know what the end result is, but we're certainly aware of what you're talking about, and I think that's very important.
Thank you.
I'm Bob Wilner, Executive Director of the Oregon International Council. I appreciate your willingness to hear me. I spoke the other day on 2415. Having since read the fine print in 2744, I am very much concerned about some of the looseness that has crept into it. The word may, I think, is being read by a number of districts as meaning we can forget it. One friend of mine was told last week that if pending legislation goes through, that district will curtail its foreign language program. I assume it's this pending legislation we're talking about. It really looks as if the intent, when the paragraph that called in the law, that called for rigorous content standards and instruction in identified content areas is eliminated, I think that's a star flag for a lot of people to cut back on standards. And when that is combined with other passages in the law, I went through and found a couple of pages yesterday of things that are being taken out, which I think are an invitation to a lot of districts that feel hard-pressed to get rid of a lot of teaching. And I was delighted to hear that consideration is being given to try to tighten up the language. I'd be glad to leave copies of this memo I did. Once again, I would agree with everybody who said it's not the certificate that counts, it's the standards. And I think that is crucially important. But I think those standards are crucially important, and I think to take away standards and to take away very clear expectations of teaching and learning in the social sciences, in second language, in health, in the arts, in physical education, is an invitation to go backwards, and specifically to take away the requirement that schools provide instruction in second language. It takes us back to 1980, which was about when the state board decided to require that all high schools provide second language instruction. So I'm very much hoping that there will be further amendments in this bill before it gets any farther. That's really what I wanted to say, and I appreciate the opportunity to say it.
Thank you. Very good. Daniel Tyndall, Marie Edwards, and Marcia, and I need some help on that last name. Oh, very good. That's simple. Marcia Ackerman. Who would like to go first?
I guess I will.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, thank you for this time. My name is Daniel Tyndall, and I'm a doctoral candidate at Oregon State University under my mentor, Dr. Hans Vandermars. And I wanted to just lend support into the comments he made. And my main purpose was, in speaking today, was to inform you basically on what I've seen in my brief time at Oregon State. What I intend to do in my life is to teach future physical education teachers to do it correctly, so to speak. I've had the privilege of looking over or observing some 35 pre-service teachers. I've traveled from Salem to Sweet Home to Eugene to watch these individuals under some tremendous mentor teachers, some of whom are here today. I've seen the adaptive setting, adaptive physical education. And the one thing that our pre-service teachers, as we teach now at Oregon State, become worried that what are they doing it for, so to speak. To have standards and not assess them is something that worries them. It's devaluing physical education in their mind, in their eyes. So many times we drill into them the importance of our children living active lifestyles. Not increasing their fitness, but just giving them the tools necessary to be active beyond their school years. If we don't assess the standards in which we're trying to present these individuals, it really, like I say, devalues what the choices they made to become educators in this field. My goal is to be very short and basically that's all I have to say, to let you know that as I prepare to enter this field, I too become worried on the direction it would take, you know, with the sim and the cam. Thank you.
Representative Backlund and Committee, I'm Maria Edwards. I'll just quickly read my short written testimony. After 29 years of teaching English, the sim and the cam have only added confusion to my teaching assignment. Each year changes are made, and the next year these changes are postponed, canceled, or implemented without proper input. This program is not required of private schools, homeschoolers, or transfers into a district. The colleges in Oregon do not require the above students to have this to get a diploma or to get into an Oregon college. How can we require this of seniors who transfer to Oregon high schools their senior year? We cannot make them test in all of these areas in one semester. The test correctors are not always teachers who know the SIM and the CAM requirements to the fullest extent. Some tests are very subjective. Two people can disagree on the score, so a third makes a decision. How is this accurate? National tests are much more accurate and accountable to the state and the nation. We are all under the same guidelines if we were all using the same tests. What makes one state more special than another? Teachers spend way too much time teaching to the test, where the scores go nowhere but to the district files or national studies or local state studies. Every district has a different policy or funds to implement this, which means every school district is on a different page, depending on the funds. We must reconsider the value of this program and the money being spent on a useless endeavor. Many students and teachers do not see the worth of this program, and there is no evidence to support the rather subjective results in English, and that every district is not on the same page and every educational institution is not on the same page. Testing does not account for any grade in my class, as it is an option. As an earlier testifier said, it is not a test in English. It is a subjective written essay at the high school level. Thank you.
Chairman Backlund and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Marcia Ackerland from Hillsboro, and I feel a little bit like a bird out of water here. I'm actually a member of the public, came to testify in the public hearing. I do happen to have the K-12 teaching certificate. I've been a community college instructor and have been involved in education for the last at least 16 years. Being a member of the public, have not been down here. I haven't had information from the school, and so I'm a little misinformed about this alternative. I didn't know about this second bill that is now before us, and it seems like most of the testimony has been about testing. I came to talk about the SIM and the CAM, and so I guess I'll retain that. I spent hundreds, thousands of hours, really, researching when the reform bill came to Oregon, and I would just I've heard tonight too things that I hadn't heard before. We just had discussion here where you acknowledge that the SIM itself is not the critical component, but the standards are what is of value. And I advocate for education. I want the electorate to be educated, a very comprehensive education that serves anyone in any direction that they want to go. I wonder if any of you have ever looked at any of these documents. Scans, reports. The reason I ask that is, and also another document about the German educational tracking system. This is from, this tells us that our bill that brought in the SIM-CAM was based on the apprenticeship programs in Germany, that it is in fact a tracking system. And then an article that I pulled up quickly. Just learned about the hearing yesterday, so I didn't really have a chance to prepare too well. But here's a Newsweek article from April of 96 talking about how the German model has failed. I just want to advocate with those who have said so already, the SIM and CAM itself are not the vehicle to bring improvement to education
in Oregon. The reason I say that is because I've studied extensively what the point of all that is and what it really accomplishes, rather than the SIM and the CAM themselves do not accomplish an educated electorate. They don't, they are not necessary to require reasonable high school graduation requirements like we've heard tonight about students being able to write an essay or give a speech or, you know, many other things that have brought up standards for civics, etc. I would just advocate that the SIM and CAM are not, they're not the critical component to quality education, and I would advocate that they are not, that I would like to see them gone for the reason that the point of them was to bring about a merger between education and labor. And this is very, very important for you to consider, because what you do is you transfer.
Could you finish in a sentence or two or three?
I'm sorry?
Could you finish in a sentence or two or three?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, what happens is that the student is converted in the classroom to human resource material. The purpose of education becomes to be employable. The customer, instead of the parent on behalf of the student, the customer of education turns out then to be labor. And education is really, that's not what it's about. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Renee Lear, Francis, oh, I got a problem here in the last name, sorry. And Alita Haas Holcomb. Who'd like to begin?
I think I will.
Okay, good.
I'd like to thank Chair Backlund and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify tonight in support of House Bill 2744. For the record, my name is Rene Leger, and I'm the executive director of a nonprofit organization called Employers for Education Excellence. And we were started in 1996 by the Oregon Business Council. Our mission is to advance academic achievement for students in Oregon's public schools. One of our key areas of focus has really been to develop partnerships between employers and schools to advance this mission. I guess where I'd like to just start quickly is, again, to remind people, it's been said through the testimony tonight as well as on Monday, that we do have a system in place now that really does measure progress of student achievement statewide, and we've made significant gains using that system in reading, math, and other subject areas across all grade levels. We've got some real success to build on, and it would be a shame to go backwards. What I'd like to shift gears, though, and talk about a little bit is another topic that came up and I don't think was addressed very well by any of the previous testimonians. This idea of do the certificates have value, or do meeting these standards have value? I think that's the more important question. And the chair talked a little bit earlier about the Oregon University system and the connection to going on to higher ed, and so there's evidence already there. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about some work that we've done regarding creating value from the perspective of employers. Will employers value these standards, either their certificates or the standards, again, that are demonstrated by these certificates? I've had the privilege over the past year to work on a program called Show It Counts, and I will leave some brochures behind you for you for members of the committee. It's a program that we started really to try to talk to employers and community leaders about what are these certificates, what are the standards that we're talking about. We find that there's just a lot of misinformation or lack of communication about them. It's not that the product is bad, it's just that the communication has been, I think, abysmal about them. We've done presentations to chambers, rotaries, and other groups with the hope that we can educate them about what's really going on in schools at the elementary, middle, and high school level, what's different in schools today than when we went to school. And how is that evidenced by these standards? What we've done also at the same time is really encourage employers to support students who are meeting these benchmarks. And we've got a whole guide. It's called the Employer Guide to Student Achievement. I will also leave that behind as well. Some of the things that they're doing is they're providing mentors and tutors to help kids who aren't meeting those benchmarks. They're providing learning opportunities which align more, I suppose, with the CAM requirements. They're providing incentives. For example, Portland General Electric employees, the kids of employees who earn their certificate of initial mastery, get a $50 gift certificate to Borders Books, and other incentives are being created. Some are actually modifying their hiring practices to show a preference for certificates of initial mastery earners, and others are recognizing those that have met the standards. Let me just share with you the fun thing about the campaign. When we go into a community, whether it's Klamath Falls or Portland, or anywhere across the state, we've done probably about 25 of these presentations. The big message is that kids tell the story better than any of us. Kids tell the story very, very well. And what they do is they don't talk about the value of SIM or CAM because right now it's emerging. What they talk about is what they've had to do to meet those standards. And when they do that, they knock your socks off.
Renee, could you finish up?
You bet. Yeah. Parents tell us, I hope my kids meet these standards. Educators say, thanks for validating our work. Employers say, I wish we could hire kids like this that develop skills that are demonstrated by these standards. Our message to you is, stay the course, make adjustments, but this is the time to celebrate progress, not to jettison the system. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Okay.
Please.
Chair Backlund and Vice Chair Hobson and members of the committee, my name is Francis Charbonnier. I'm just a plain, ordinary school board member, and I'm speaking for myself, even though I think my views are shared by many. I've had a lot of experience with the Oregon Education Act. I was on the school board in McMinnville when it was adopted unanimously, I might say, or essentially unanimously by the 1991 legislature. I've also been on the board of directors of OSBA for 4 years, and I was on the advisory council to the ODE for the implementation of the Oregon Education Act for 3 years. And of course, I've been watching the implementation in my own district. So I would like to say, on the basis of this, that we talk a lot about SIM and CAM, but actually the core of the Oregon Education Act was the development of rigorous content standards, curriculum standards, for all grades and all subjects. And then the development of comprehensive assessments, which would be able to measure not only whether the students had mastered the content of the standards, but also whether they could exercise critical thinking and be creative, and also whether they could apply the knowledge that they had gained. And of course, this is the purpose, say, in math, for instance, you have a multiple choice test, which is just a test whether you've acquired the knowledge, and then you have a problem-solving test, which is, again, testing whether you can apply the knowledge that you have to real problem situations. And finally, you have work samples, essays, portfolios, classroom tasks, which demonstrates that you can actually create something, you know, from that knowledge and that understanding of the knowledge. And so the Oregon assessments then are far superior to the assessments that you find in most other states. Okay, well, you know, I have these things more developed in here, so I would like to say that, you know, it would be, we've gained a great deal from the Oregon assessment. And these assessments have been developed by teachers and also with the help of some outside testing agencies, and also been validated And okay, and therefore they have, and they're uniquely aligned to our curriculum standards. So when we say, well, let's do away with this and, you know, go to find off-the-shelf, you know, standard testing, it would not be aligned with our curriculum standards, and therefore we have to do the job of either changing the test so it's aligned, or otherwise changing the curriculum standards. And I don't think we want to do both of these. And I think these are recognized as quality. In terms of the NCLB, I think Oregon is at a great advantage because it has already a well-tested, really classy system of standards and assessments which has been approved by the federal government, so that all we need to do is just to add assessments on the off-level grades, 4, 6, and 7. Okay, and so based on this, I think that the idea of scrapping the system would be very disruptive, would yield no benefit, and therefore I'm firmly opposed to Bill 2415. On the other hand, because of shortage of funding, we need to be concerned with, you know, the making the system more efficient. And in here, I'm proposing 4 directions in which we could go to make the system, to improve the system, make it more effective, and they're all consistent with your Bill 2744, which I heartily support.
Thank you.
Well, my name is Alita Haas Holcomb, and I'm a teacher in transition, and I know a lot about stopwatches. You ready? greetings to the members of the House Education Committee. No Child Left Behind is kind of a wonderful vision. Leaving No Child Behind has really been a vision of physical educators for many years, and perhaps I should share that my first visit to speak about before a legislative committee regarding concerns that the children in our state were being left behind in the curricular area of physical education dates back to the 65th Oregon Legislative Assembly in 1989. It was at that time that we felt the need to advocate for a resolution encouraging physical education programs for K through 12 in our Oregon schools, and our efforts did result in Senate Joint Resolution Number 4. Why did we feel that it was necessary to go for a resolution? Because the needs of Oregon children were not being met. The quality of physical education in Oregon was not as it should be. Many schools were ignoring the responsibility to educate the whole child. Physical education was not a priority, and the status of physical education programs was low. As SIN and CAM became the strategy for elevating the educational performance of Oregon students, physical educators were really among the first to recognize standards and benchmarks as a good thing. AFRD, which is the American Alliance for Health and PE and Recreation and Dance, had already their national standards, and so most of us were very familiar with these, and physical educators became sort of in the forefront of helping other teachers across the state understand goal-based and standards-based curriculum. Unfortunately, there was a waiting line, however, to enter the new SIN and CAM. I hesitate to say ball game. Physical education was not among the curricular areas to be given SIN status by the Department of Education. And what impact did this have on students of Oregon? Well, I could actually repeat the message that I gave earlier. Needs of children weren't being met. Quality in Oregon was not as it should be. Schools were ignoring responsibility. Physical education was not a priority. And the status of physical education programs was low. Finally, after a lot of work to build consensus in July of 1999, the Oregon legislature passed House Bill 3307, which was a bipartisan effort, and physical education was finally placed under the protective umbrella of the SIM. Although physical education had been placed into the SIM, it had been given Tier 2 status, yet appropriate and quality standards and benchmarks were developed and are hopefully being implemented as I speak. And I say hopefully because, unlike Tier 1 status, physical education's Tier 2 allows districts to be accountable for their own assessment in the year 2003 and 4. Despite skepticism that providing quality programs would continue to be ignored by some districts, if not being held to a higher accountability, the passage of House Bill 3307 was really a great day for Oregon students K-12, and the needs of the whole child were officially recognized, and travel on the road to quality physical education had begun.
Could you finish up shortly, please?
I can. No Child Left Behind is in the opportunity to become physically educated for a healthy and active life is where we should be headed. Instead of taking 10-year step backward, we should be running forward to increase the status of this particular area. And that's all I have to say.
Okay. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question of Renee, if I might. I certainly agree with you that the lack of education in regard to the SIM, it continues to amaze me how many people don't realize that SIM is just a little three-letter word that we call our high standards. With that in mind, I'll take some of the responsibility as an educator, but I'm also concerned that the business community and higher ed, in my estimation, haven't really stepped up to the plate. And I'm very appreciative of the fact tonight and other night we have had indications of this. What can we do to ensure that business and higher ed work with us to make sure that the value of these high standards that we call the SIM are maintained and encouraged?
Well, I think one thing the campaign that we've been doing is a start, but I think what you can do basically is get clarity that we're going to stay the course. And I think the questions that we get back as we go to communities are, you know, they see articles in the paper and they wonder, gee, is this here to stay or is it not? And the more clarity there is that the legislature is behind this and they're going to stay the course, I feel very confident that the business community is already starting to be behind it, but will continue to do so. So I think that's probably the most important thing.
Thank you.
Chair.
Yes, Representative Dalton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Renee, did I hear you say that you had knowledge of some employers or some businesses that were modifying their hiring practices to evaluate SIM or take a look at that as a hiring objective?
Yes, there are some that have actually put it on their application in this handout that I'll provide. For example, ADEC, which manufactures dental equipment out of Newburgh, they actually ask for both, have you earned your certificate of initial mastery, yes or no? Have you earned your certificate of advanced mastery, yes or no? And all things considered, if the candidates of equal quality on other criteria, but they have their SIM, they will prefer them in the process. Prefer is the key word, not require. They recognize there's a lot of variables to take into consideration in employing someone.
And so in your pamphlet, do you have a couple of examples of businesses that are incorporating the SIM in their hiring?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. I have another question.
Follow up?
Yeah, no, my question is for Dr. Charbonnet. I can sense your passion about Oregon's assessment system as an effective tool of encouraging students to perform. And so I guess I have a question for you about House Bill 2744 and how you feel about removing the requirement for the foreign language assessment and the social science assessment.
Okay, I'd be happy to try to answer that question. And I would say, you know, the implementation of the Oregon Education Act has been a slow process. And as you know, for the SIM, for the subjects that were incorporated in the formal Pence grade assessment, which leads to the determination, have you or have you not earned a SIM, you know, we started with language arts and math. Then we added science. And then we were going to add social studies, except it turned out this will be difficult. When you're in math, it's very easy to have an objective test. You know, math multiple choice, there's a right answer and there's a wrong answer. There's no argument. However, when you get into social studies, you know, it's a lot more difficult. And so they tried, you know, to have some design some tests from social studies. The studies that were studied by teachers and done some pilot programs, and they were not very satisfactory. So as a result of this, they decided to postpone that. On foreign languages, we're going to have some strict test, and then it turned out this was not implementable in most districts, and therefore they gave up and said, well, okay, we're going to push the deadlines, and instead of having a state mandated standard for foreign languages, we're going to let each school district, you know, determine what is an appropriate standard for their district considering their capability. You know, for the arts, again, the same thing. And so, ideally, you know, it was a vision that the SIM would become ever more inclusive and would include all of these, as well as wellness, health, and PE, because it was recognized that all of these subjects are important to a complete education. However, you get to the point where again, there's such a shortage of funds that there is a desire for focusing and efficiency. And I think this is what is leading. I don't think that Chair Backlund is really enthusiastic about limiting the SIM to just three subjects. It's just a matter of efficiency, you know, and recognizing that we have to do those three subjects anyway because of the No Child Left Behind Act, and therefore, but we really probably don't have time if we do those three well, we don't have time to do the others as well. Now, I do hope that, I mean, we still have curriculum standards in all of these Tier 2 areas, and we also have assessments that are either in the process of development or future development, you know, to be able to do some reasonable testing or assessment in those areas. And I very much hope that the fact that they are not formally included in SIM does not mean that they're going to be devalued or de-emphasized, because I'm convinced that they all, well, who is to say, you know, I can say, of course, I have a PhD in physics, and so I can say, well, math and science, I mean, these are the important subjects, or language arts. But somebody can say, for that particular child, arts is the important thing, because that's what's going to make him a successful citizen. You know, or it could be social studies is an extremely important subject. I appreciate the difficulty, the question that you answered. You know, you have four areas: history, civics, geography, and economics. And which one are you going to pick? And I say, that's terrible. You don't want to pick one. They're all four very legitimate. And so, I mean, the poor lady did what she could. you know, and the chief finally insisted on having two. But really, ideally, I mean, all four have their place. And therefore, I do hope that even though you have a lot of maize in here, and of course, what the maize do is they give the school districts flexibility, which they all desperately ask, because again, they find their hands tied, as Superintendent Pat Bedore, you know, indicated. And so when you put a mayor in there, I think most districts are going to try to do their best not to de-emphasize those subjects. But they will know that if it comes to a crunch, you know, and they just can't do the things that are mandated to do and also give full attention to these other subjects, they're going to be postponed a little bit.
Dr. It's unfortunate. Sherman, thank you so much for your answer.
Oh, sure.
Well, thank you very much.
And I managed to have a longer answer than my speech.
Representative Nolan.
I'd like to follow up just briefly on that line of questioning, and I'd like to address my question to Mr.
Leger.
Since you come to us on behalf of businesses in Oregon, and particularly from some technical background, the math and science may be interesting and useful from a skills point of view, but do you have an opinion, or does your group have an opinion about whether you can have a fully educated citizen without the elements that are in the Tier 2 category?
Well, I'm going to speak on behalf of myself right now, but I would, I mean, ideally, we would love all of the elements, and I think what we're recognizing is that given the financial pressures, that there has to be some compromises. Ideally, when we started out in this endeavor, I think the vision that was that we were looking at all the elements that were necessary to provide a well-rounded education, and I think that we would not want to diminish the value of any of the areas, but it's a compromise right now.
One quick follow-up.
Follow-up.
If it's important, then should the compromise not come on the side of what we're willing to pay for it rather than cutting some important service out? Raising the amount of money that's available instead of limiting the services available to the children?
I'm not sure I understand your question. I'm sorry.
You referenced budget limitations.
Yes, that's what you're saying.
Balance the budget two different ways.
Right, you can raise more revenue.
Spend, or you can increase, take a second job in the family analogy.
Right.
And would business be interested in having those skills enough to help us find the money to pay for them?
I don't know that. I don't know the answer to that question, honestly. I don't know.
Well, I think this is what you find in Portland. You know, they just voted to give a 1% business tax to help fund, restore a full year, and obviously those tier two subjects are going to benefit. So I think you have your answer. I think business would indeed be very interested. Of course, it's a question. The business is not in a position to take off the entire school education budget at $5 billion per biennium,
I asked about helping, not...
Okay, I'll be careful what I commit to.
Very good, thank you.
Thank you.
We have four people signed up to testify, and we're going to go a little bit past our 7 o'clock deadline, if that's okay. And by the way, for those of you who are so excited, you want to journey with us to OMSI tomorrow in Portland. We're going to do this again and hear from the metropolitan area before the evening. Anyway, Tom Henry, Meg Greiner, and Karen Kinnett.
Yep, okay, I'll go. Chair Backman and committee. My name is Meg Greiner, and I'm an elementary physical education teacher in Central School District, which is Monmouth Independence. I'm also the only National Board certified physical education teacher in Oregon. And I also have a pink slip. And I agree with what Alita Hass-Holcomb had to say about physical education, and I will speak from my heart this evening. My concern with eliminating the SIM piece for physical education is within the 17 years that I've taught, I've seen the greatest gains within the last year of accountability for physical education within a district, within a state. And if we go and eliminate that piece, I'm afraid we'll go back to, may I say, throwing out the ball, back to the dodgeball years, back to the fitness pieces that we would rather not remember for most of you who went through that situation. And for me, who never had a physical education teacher, and I didn't even know it existed until I went to college. So from my heart, I would rather that didn't return to that piece and to do whatever happened, because I know from experience that elementary teachers for physical education and music will go away. Middle school will be taught by people who aren't trained, and even high school can't be misassigned to teach those areas. And the only thing, or the only leg to stand on, is your high school requirement, and that is it, if you go back to that piece. As far as the No Child Left Behind, we will be left behind also within that piece. So I implore you to hopefully find some solution to that and to keep us. It's the quality teachers that keep these programs going. And, physical education is your best life insurance. Without that, we don't have healthy bodies, and you start early, and hopefully it will continue for a lifetime. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Karen Kinnett. I'm an English teacher at North Salem High School. I just wanted to talk about the money that's spent on grading these tests and administering these tests. I, as an English teacher, I assign essays all of the time. I take them home. I read through them. I give my kids feedback, written feedback, comments about their writing, and scores for their writing. I do use the state scoring rubric for the writing. For the past 4 years, I have also graded the SIM papers for the state. I love that because I earn about $500 for 1 week of grading. So as a wage earner, it's great. As a taxpayer, it outrages me that I'm assigning scores, I'm reading a paper in about 2 minutes, assigning it a score, and then it goes back to the student. The student doesn't get their scores until about 5 months after they took the test. And I'm only one grader in this state. There's hundreds of graders. You're spending a fortune paying people to grade these tests when you're already paying me as a teacher to grade my own students' papers and to actually give them feedback, written feedback, versus just a score, which doesn't mean very much to them, especially when it comes 5 months after they've taken the test and they can't even remember what they've written. I'm all for standards. I think they're great, but I don't think that we need to spend money in this state to prove that we have standards in place. At North Salem High School, we have a senior project that is required for all graduating seniors. They do a 15-hour project, either a community service or they create something. They also have to write and pass a research paper, and then they have to give a speech to the community where they present their project to community board members, and they have to pass that in order to graduate. That's one of the standards we've put in place at North Salem High School. It doesn't cost us very much to do it. It's effective. All of the kids know they have to do it. Some of them sweat about it. Some of them get excited about it, but it works. And it doesn't waste taxpayer money like the SIM and CAM do. I love standards. I love holding our kids accountable. I want my kids to be as successful as they possibly can, and I try to do that every day in my classroom. I don't think that I need to fill in the bubble sheets that I have to fill in for the Salem-Keizer School District, where I spend an hour, 2 hours of my time filling in bubble sheets instead of planning or grading or helping a student. So the SIM tests are too expensive, and I don't think they're worth the time. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Tom Henry. I'm the Assistant Superintendent for Instruction with the Eugene School District. As we sort through all the stuff in the stuff mill around SIM and CAM, I think it's critically important that we make a distinction between standards and assessment and the awarding of certificates. And I'm heartened to know tonight that you've acknowledged several times that distinction, and it's extremely important that we maintain high standards and credible and appropriate assessment. And as you heard testimony tonight, I think there's a great deal of support in this state around the standards that have been developed and the assessments that have been developed. They're credible, they work, they give us data that's important, and we need to have them. Where I think the real issue lies is the awarding of the certificates. There's some challenges there that pose a great deal of challenges for our schools, and I have three suggestions if you continue to award certificates that may help, and that is if you continue, because I have questions whether or not we should. But if we do, the first thing that we need to do is eliminate the work sample requirements, and the reason for that is that they are of questionable reliability and validity. These are issued by teachers. There is not consistency across the state as to the scoring of those work samples in classrooms, and they are not reliable. The other problem they create, of course, is a huge workload burden for teachers to do all the recording to issue the certificates. Now, I'm the first to tell you that using work samples in classrooms as a teaching and learning tool is extremely important, and we ought to be doing that. But the requirements should not be there for giving wholesale, full-scale awarding of certificates in the state. They're not reliable. The second thing that you should do if you award certificates, uncouple them. To have an all or nothing really doesn't work, and I think you should allow the awarding of certificates in all of the subjects, including second language, the arts, physical education, but you can earn them separately rather than the conjunctive model where they're all in one right now, and it would honor all subject areas. The third thing that I think you need to consider isn't related to the SIM, but I have to say this when I have your ear. It's related to the CAM. The CAM has been tied to graduation in 2006-2007. We do not have the capacity to do that right now. And you need to take a look at that as you're looking at legislation regarding SIM and CAM. Thank you.
Tom, I might ask you a question. In the 2001 session, there was some interest in uncoupling the SIM. I think the superintendent at that time, Mr. Bunn, proposed that, and it didn't make it. The thought was, perhaps, that it might involve more teacher time and effort if there was a separate SIM for each subject. That you do not see that?
I don't see that. I think that, first of all, I need to reiterate again that awarding the certificate is not what's important, and that is creating huge workload burdens, and we'd have to get rid of some of the requirements I talked about. But if you were going to award it and you streamlined it, I think we could do it for every subject area. We have second language teachers. We have physical education teachers. Some of them are here tonight, are working very hard on assessments. They want to recognize their kids, and I think it could be done. It's the all or nothing part of it that really gets hard to manage for kids and really does make it difficult for them to be motivated.
Yes, Representative Dalton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mrs. Kinnett. In my office, I have a couple of essays from students at North Salem High School that were SIM graded essays, and in reviewing those essays, these two essays completely lack clarity of thought or any reasonable structure, and they were colloquially written, so they weren't formal. But as I looked at the grades of the SIM grade that they received a better than passing SIM. And the chair Backlund and I talked a little bit about this, and I know that you deal with this every day. So I just wanted to get an indication from you about how effective that SIM grading system is in your English class at your school.
I like the grading system because I like how you can break down a score and giving them a high score for IEDs and content if they've earned it, even though they might have severe spelling issues or punctuation issues. So you can kind of reward students for what they've done well and then also show them where they need to improve. But it's more effective done in the classroom where I can give them written feedback and also talk to them about their writing. The SIM papers that are scored for the SIM, they get no comments about those papers. All they get is a score. And I think somebody said before, it's a subjective score where if the reader likes it, they're going to get a higher score. If they don't like it, they're going to get a lower score. We do have a rubric we're supposed to grade them according to, but what I think is a good idea differs from what you think is a good idea. And obviously, having read the papers that you have in your office, I can't tell whether I disagree or agree with the graders, but it's subjective. People like different things in their writing. And somebody was obviously, who read that paper, was touched by it in some way, even though it has major flaws.
And follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
I did notice that there were written comments, though, on the essay from the teacher, and I'm wondering if that went beyond the requirement for a SIM essay.
Then this must be a work sample that you have and not the actual SIM test if there are written comments, because the SIM test, there are no written comments for the SIM writing test.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Assuming there, and there is certainly some validity what you're saying about subjectivity, what would be your suggestion for having a statewide assessment in writing, and particularly in line with No Child Left Behind?
For writing, it is definitely more difficult. If you want a statewide assessment, I suppose you could go to a multiple choice where they would do, it would be mostly grammar. You wouldn't really be able to get their ideas and content in that way. And I guess you would just have to assume or make the assumption that the teachers in the high schools are doing the best that they can with the students that come into their classrooms, and every day we try to improve their skills. I have some kids in my classroom who I might have them for 9 weeks. They're not going to become fabulous writers in 9 weeks if they weren't a decent writer to begin with. I try to take them where they're at and work with them and get them as good as I can before they leave me. And there's no state test that is going to take the place of the classroom teacher in trying to help their kids.
Thank you very much. Okay, our last testifier, Gary, is that Riddell or Riddle?
It's Riddell.
Riddell, excuse me.
Yes. Okay. Very much.
Thanks for letting me talk. I wasn't sure.
Gary, could you, for the record, indicate your name?
Okay, yeah. Sure. I'm Gary Riddell, and I teach physical education and health in Eugene. And I also have worked 2 years helping assess the or recommendations for the physical education SIM for the Eugene School District. I'm also a father, and my child does go to public school, and I'm also a taxpayer. I wasn't going to, as I sit and listen, it seems like to me there's superintendents, and there's the head of the OEA, and there's business people, but I feel pretty far removed from the actual physical education environment in this building and this setting. But I feel like there's two things that I'm going to try to be brief that I'd like to say. And I was hoping that somebody on this committee had some physical education teaching background. And I didn't know when I came here whether that there could be a dialogue. But can I ask that question? Is there somebody here that teaches physical education or that did?
Student teaching.
Well, that's good. That's good. Because I saw when the social studies issue came up that you kind of perked up because you had some experience in it and it meant something to you. And I think the reality of no... First of all, I want to say that I'm not in favor of either one of these bills because, in my mind, it does effectively eliminate SIM standards for physical education. And I think that's the reality because of the financial situation. And I know that because tomorrow morning my principal is proposing that we cut some physical education in my building. And I'm not here to bash him other than to say I think he feels like he has to because he can't take it from anywhere else. So that's a reality. And I hear people up here saying, and I don't mean to be, I'm not being critical, but that you're assuming that folks would keep standards and keep things going, but I just don't think that's real. I don't think that's going to happen. And so that's frustrating, and it's also it's not what's best for our children. And the last thing I want to say is we have some really good people working on our committee. And I was kind of hoping that somebody here would ask me if I had to say, we have three strands in the physical education SIM standards, what one that we could keep. And if you asked me that question, I would say strand number two, which is what our district has proposed, that we start with the fitness for life, because I think that's the one that's going to make the most impact. And if you have to cut, if you have to do the measure that they call SIM light, which I think is kind of insulting, but if you go that way, I was hoping that you guys would at least have a mandatory SIM standard for fitness for life to take that one strand, because I think that's very doable, and I think that we can still afford that. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Representative Dalto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. What are the three strands?
The three strands are movement, expressive movement. Second strand is fitness for life, and the last one is a behavior strand, like playing within the rules, that sort of thing. So in my opinion, the fitness for life is the most valuable of those three.
And why is that?
For all the things that it measures. You know, kids can...
That was a chance for you to elaborate. I was trying to throw you on so you could...
Well, I'm not prepared to go through the elaboration of okay. all the things that it will measure, but I think what it does is that children at a young age will be tested and have some feedback on where they are in terms of their health, their heart and their lungs, their flexibility, their muscular strength, their body fat, things like that, that I think are important for everyone, regardless of their children or adults.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. Time. Well, with that, then, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2415. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2744, and we'll adjourn the meeting.